are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me this week, it is the one, the only, Mr. Kevin Durso. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, we're still kind of in that...
still reeling, right?
Oh, we're still kind of hurting from a big Game 7 loss. But either way, before we get into today's show, we got a lot to talk about. We got the Western Conference Finals. We got the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, we'll probably talk about that one a little less because we're sour about it. But before we get into all of that, we're going to hit the social medias here real quick. Kevin's got it on the board behind him if you're watching on our YouTube page. We're at YWT Podcast. We're at on Twitter. Kevin is at Kevin_Durso. We're also found on Sports Talk Philly channels, which is at Sports Talk PHL on Twitter, as well as SportsTalkPhilly.com and at Flyerdelphia over there for Flyers coverage too. So we're just going to get into today. There's really not a ton going on, right? Mm-hmm. We had some Chuck Fletcher comments this week.
Yep.
We had an award to a Flyer. A Flyer hasn't won a major league award in quite a while. So that's probably our biggest story today. And I guess we'll start there.
Yeah. It's the first time that, depending on what you want to define as a major award, because they split, you know, the Jennings Award is split between both goalies who have the lowest goals against.
Yeah, if it's not the Vezina, it's not a major goalie award.
That, and the Flyers had that in 2002, 2003. It was Roman Čechmánek and Robert Esch. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
they're throwing out some names. Wait, who said the Flyers didn't have goaltending?
Yeah.
And who said the Flyers had goaltending problems?
If you want to go back and throw in when Bill Barber won the Jack Adams in the 2000-2001 season, then sure, okay, go ahead. But this is the first time an individual player...
No, I think major player award. I think we're talking
has
Hart,
won, Hart, right.
Calder, Norris, Vezina.
Yeah.
That's probably it. Conn Smythe.
Right. Right. And it's the first time an individual Flyer has won a major award as a player. And aside from, like we said, like you just gave out the list of ones, because
LaPerriere, I think those are probably considered the major ones.
Ian LaPerriere won the Masterton, but that's...
And that's great.
It is a great award.
It's not a league award.
But it's
not a major award.
It's not an achievement. Like, it's not as much of a numerical achievement award as much as it is
a statistical award.
A emotional achievement. You know, hey, there's a heartfelt moment because this guy came back and did something, persevered, made it back, and everybody all credit him. Like, let's put it this way. There was discussion about that one, too, I guess, that I'll touch on, because Oscar Lindblom was nominated and Bobby Ryan won the award.
I have no problem with Bobby Ryan winning it.
And here's the thing. No, but here's the thing.
I don't have any problem with anybody winning it, honestly.
Exactly. There's three finalists. Yep. There's 31 nominees. Does it really matter which one wins? All 31 people could win it.
Can't criticize that one at all, ever, because everyone has it.
Exactly. There is no criticism. It's the, quite frankly, it's the dumbest conversation that happens because of the fact that everybody who's nominated, whether they become a finalist or not, is deserving of the award. So take the discussion elsewhere, right, because they're all deserving. But then you get into the heart of those awards, and the Flyers hadn't had one since Eric Lindros won the Hart in 95.
Wow.
That's how long it's been since an individual Flyer, based on numbers, has won a major award like this. For the Selke, it hasn't happened since 1987. It hasn't happened since Dave Poulin won it.
The Flyers had won in 2010, Danny Briere would have gotten the Conn Smythe, and that would have changed that. But
well, sure. And, I mean, they haven't had a Conn Smythe winner since 1987 either.
Right.
But, which wasn't even a win, but, you know.
Yeah, either way, we didn't actually say it here. Sean Couturier won the Selke Award.
Much deserved.
Major award we're talking about.
Yeah, much deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. He's kind of gotten himself in the conversation. Honestly, he's been in the vague conversation, the fringe conversation for almost his whole career. It really picked up once he started putting up 70 points a year, because that's
exactly
how the award
works. It's the last 2 years.
For sure. He got that. He got nominated a couple years ago, right? He ended up finishing second.
Yeah, 2 years ago, he was a finalist and finished second to Anže Kopitar.
Last year,
he did have a chance that year. Right. And then last year, he was sixth. So
last year, he missed out on the nomination, but still had.
Which, by the way, throw out there, he finished sixth in a year where the Flyers used eight goalies and didn't have a lot of structure
and
changed everything and not very good. Like, you finished sixth in
a
defensive category. Like, you know, you're a good defensive player as much as you are an offensive forward.
And I believe he was playing through injury for a large part of that season as well.
Early on, yeah, because that was the year after the original injury that he had against Pittsburgh.
If you remember, it took him 20, 30, 40. 40 games to get started. Also, is that a chocolate milk I spy?
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Sorry,
it's
we're
morning.
Recording.
It's
on,
morning.
We're recording on Sunday morning, and Kevin just picks up a chocolate milk and takes a nice deep sip. If you're watching on our YouTube,
I forgot. To be honest with you, I grabbed water first and then realized, oh wait a minute, I have this. What am I doing?
Yeah, if chocolate milk's sitting there, you drink the chocolate milk. But regardless, sorry, it caught me off guard there.
All good.
Normally, either way, Sean Couturier wins the Selke. Yeah. First major individual award for a Flyer in a very long time, like you said, Eric Lindros with the heart.
And really the first time that he gets more exposure to the national side of things. You know, like when you're in the discussion, yes, you're part of that. But really, this is now that he's won the award, now that he's got his name to it, just let you know. I'm not trying to call him Patrice Bergeron. But at the same time, you're in a category now where you've won it. Kopitar's won it. You know, he mentioned a lot of other names besides those two. Like he mentioned, you know, obviously Ryan O'Reilly was a nominee.
Mark Stone should be there.
He mentioned, but he mentioned guys in the past too. He mentioned like Jonathan Toews, Jordan Staal. Like these are guys who he tried to mold his game for, and they were the guys who were getting nominated and winning the award like that 10 years ago. You know,
you got to think he grew up watching Bergeron. Like let's
a little
real.
Bit, sure. And I mean, Bergeron's the class of that award. I mean, they might as well rename the award the Patrice Bergeron Award.
Yes.
For how good he has been.
If they ever decide you don't
get nominated 9 years
Frank
in a row
J.
for
Selke,
nothing.
Patrice Bergeron deserves it as much as anybody. I think he's won it 11 times or something absurd. Like he is – or six times and nominated 11 or something crazy.
He's won it four, and he's been nominated for the last 9 years.
Yeah, it's –
that's what
absolutely
it is.
Absolutely.
And it's 9 years straight. Like, he almost wins, but he almost gets nominated every year without fail on reputation alone. Yeah. That you assume he's that good on both sides. And he, look.
But has anybody ever questioned it? Has anybody said,
he
doesn't deserve to be here?
Exactly. Nobody questions it because, for one, he plays that role well.
Right. He's there.
But two, for how many of those years has he played on, if not the best team in the regular season when voting happens, one of the best? Like, he's been on a team that's good every single year.
And he may very well be on the best line in hockey.
Right.
He may very well have the best wingers in hockey. He may have the easiest job of any center in the league in terms of wings.
I'm gonna do a friend of mine a favor because I've heard this before. I'm not gonna say the nickname because he even said it's
getting
beaten. Yeah, it's been beaten to death.
It's
so much.
Bad, dude.
Like,
it's such a terrible line.
Right, and they say it every single time.
Definitely,
so
Jack
I'm not
Edwards
gonna say
came
it.
Up with that.
So
right?
I'm not gonna say what the nickname of that line is.
It definitely Jack Edwards that came up with that, right?
Oh, probably.
Like,
I don't know.
It absolutely has to be.
If it is, then it gives them – then even Boston fans don't like him for that reason, possibly, because, like –
that one might be a little over the top.
That's all right.
But either way, he might have the easiest job of any center in the league. Can you think of any center in the league playing with two better wingers?
No.
Right. Like, you look – even – you think about single wingers, you know, Kucherov and Ovechkin and blah, blah, blah. I will still take the combination of Marchand and Pastrnak over that guy.
You might have mentioned the combination that might be the next closest then. Like, and they're getting past that point of, like, this line is in their prime. You know, Bergeron's the oldest member of the line. Nick Backstrom is probably the next guy who has like the easiest time because Ovechkin's on one side and what is it? It's either Tom Wilson or TJ Oshie on the other. But Wilson's not. When it's Oshie, I think that's when I'm thinking of it. Like if TJ Oshie's on the other side,
and maybe Jacob Vrana gets some time there too. Maybe. You
know, well, Vrana might move up in time.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, and I'd love to see. Well, once they have a head coach, I'd love to see what they decide to do with that grouping.
By the way, I'm not sure if you've heard, but there are whispers. Of Mike Babcock.
There are whispers of Mike Babcock. I have heard.
And I would like to say that
I
talked
about
that on this show.
One of the other names we mentioned, I thought I heard had whispers too. I think Gerard Gallant was getting some whispers too.
Yeah, I believe they have both interviewed twice.
Oh, well, that's more than I've heard about it then. And not that I'm trying to keep my finger on the pulse of –
you haven't listened to the latest Dangle podcast then.
Not that I'm trying to keep my finger on the pulse of the Washington Capitals coaching search. It's really, you know what?
I think it matters.
It does matter, but here's I'm not keeping my finger on the pulse of it because for a change, I'm not sitting here wondering who the Flyers' next head coach is going to be.
It is kind of nice.
And who the GM's going to be.
Hey, Kevin.
Quite frankly, what crazy changes.
Who's the Flyers' next coach? You have no idea.
Elaine Vigneault is still going to be the coach for a while.
Who's the Flyers' next goalie?
Don't need to talk about it. He's already here. Although I do want to comment on something about this, though.
I do have one more before we go
sure,
into your thing.
But we do know who the goalie is. You're right.
Right. Who's your next captain?
Okay, see, that one's trickier.
Yeah.
That one's because way trickier.
I don't think Claude's going anywhere in the next, well, very, very minimum until his contract's up.
Which means you're still waiting on another 2 years.
Right.
You know, at least.
And I'd be surprised if they didn't re-sign him at that point. I would like Claude Giroux to be a Flyer for life.
Sure. And,
but who wears the C after him?
And you're going to take
2 years. That could be in 5 years.
Right. You're going to take a long look in the mirror when you have to make that next contract. Because once the 8.5 or whatever, 8.25 million is up for the next 2 years.
We got to look at where we're at.
Well, no, you're going to have to pull that back, probably cut it in half and see if he really wants to. Like, that's the test. That it becomes the test. Do you really want to be a Flyer for life?
Yep.
Because if you do, then you'll take less to play the rest of your career there. Because, and think about that. You go back and forth between Ottawa, where you're from, and Philadelphia, where you spend 6 to 8 months out of the year, guaranteed. And, you know, your family's from here. I'm pretty sure. No, I don't, no, that's not true. I was about to say his son was born here. That's not true.
No.
His son was born in Ottawa.
Over the summer, yeah.
But, well, no, I didn't know if they were, had already moved back possibly because it was late August. And
I gotcha.
You know. Who knows? But no, okay, never mind.
And obviously, this is a conversation.
But they do live there.
But
they do live there. But they do live there throughout the year. He's got another. I mean, you always see the, like, anybody who goes on Instagram who follows Claude Drew's wife knows that they're walking around town all the time, and
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. Like, they've really made it their home. So if you want to be that player with this team for life, and probably, let's be real about it, anybody who plays here for as long already as he has and could go further, you're pretty secure when you're done playing too.
Right.
Like, you can find work.
I'd be curious, and I don't know if we're reading too much into this. I'd be curious if Claude bought a house. Because last I heard was the Flyers put out a video a while ago following him, blah, 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 game day, whatever. And
was,
he lived in an
apartment.
He lived coming back to Philly. Yeah, behind the glass. And he still lived in an apartment.
Because he's living in this. I don't think it's an apartment. I think it's like a condo.
Sure, but it's
a fancy-ass condo.
It's not a home. He now has kid with, I would imagine, probably more on the way.
I think eventually.
I believe they've mentioned that before. Again, I don't know. But yeah. If he doesn't buy a house,
well,
I'm a little worried about it. I'm just saying.
I guess.
And again, I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, and I'm not going crazy about it.
I think you are reading a little too much into it.
Because, and I'm not going crazy with the information.
Well, because I think that while he's a player and while you have that, like, let's put it this way. This is not a team that has a bunch of guys that say, we're done playing this game. Let's go out to what place should we go out to hang out and slam?
They don't go to Rexy's anymore.
Well, no, but his days of doing, I mean, he did that in his day. I mean, when he was 24 years old,
Jeff Carter and Mike Richards were here.
Right. But now, you don't hear things about that. They go, they play the game, they leave, they go home, and they see their families.
It's a different era in the NHL.
And that's also why it was so talked about when they went to the bubble, when everybody did, because it was, most of these guys are family men.
Yeah.
Like, they just are, you know?
Yeah, the NHL is a different being than it was in 1986 or whatever.
I think to an extent they do their, not partying, I don't want to call it that, but like they have their fun in that nature. Just hanging out with the guys like at the hotel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when you go on a road trip, I think that they just, it's all right, we're going to dinner and we'll run up a large bill because we can.
And the rookie will pay for it.
But then we're going to go back to the hotel. And a lot of, like, you got a lot of the kids who come into the league too. A lot of the 19, 20 year olds. Things
a lot
like
of video
that.
Games.
It's video games. They go and they want to play their video games. Exactly.
And I don't know. I don't know if you heard Kevin Hayes recently on Spit and Chicklets, but he kind of talked about that. He said, guys aren't going out and, you know, drinking, you know, leaving practice at noon and drinking till 4 anymore. Like, that's not
right.
You know, lunch turns into dinner, turns into drinks at the bar. Like, that doesn't happen as much. Guys are hanging out at the hotel. And he said guys are playing a lot of video games. And
yeah,
it's the kind of thing that it just kind of is what it is. You know, that's kind of where the league has gone.
I mean, if you want to reference the same show, you know, when they did Behind the Glass, Carter Hart's walking around going to Whole Foods, you know, like, okay, okay, great. You know,
honestly,
you got stuff to do and you're going to go do it outside of practice time.
Not sure he can do that as easily anymore. Kid's face.
You know what?
That was before the season.
Oh, I know. He goes,
he had a big season from a recognizability standpoint, I would imagine.
I'm not sure if you
can go to Whole Foods quite as easily anymore.
Yeah, it's, you know, I doubt it too, but, yep. You know, Yeah, so I mean, it's not that kind of style. So yeah, the captain question, that's what we're trying to get back to, is the answer.
Yeah.
This was asked before. The station had this asked as a question during like one of their ask segments, and I thought long and hard about it too, because I thought, like, and to me, there's three names that come to mind. One's further down the line than others, perhaps. Like, there's two guys who I think you can sit there and say, if you had to make the change tomorrow, there's one who's clear and there's one who's on his way to being that guy, and then one who further down the line I think could.
Let me hit the two easy ones.
Because I know you're gonna get them.
Sean Couturier and Ivan Provorov.
Exactly.
Okay. Third one further down the line. Let me take a guess at that one. Are you thinking about Scott Laughton like that?
No.
Okay. Forward or defenseman here?
It's a forward.
Okay. So you got to be thinking about Joel Farabee.
No, actually.
Really? Because I'm thinking about him long term like that.
No, you know. Man. Then I'll tell you who I'm thinking of then, because
if you're thinking further down the line than Provorov,
and I think you'll get the point when I give the name.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Travis Konecny.
Yep.
And the reason I'm thinking further down the line is because, like, I looked at the playoffs this year and I go, he struggled, and you could see the frustration. And to me, for that kind of role, you're not there yet. Provorov really carries himself like that already.
And people, sound weird?
And people respond that way. So, yeah.
Oh, Provorov skates around like he already has an A on his jersey.
Right. And see, that's why, like, the way I phrased it was, if I had to do this tomorrow, if you came to me tomorrow and said, Claude, you can't be the captain anymore, you need to pick a new one, the answer is Sean Couturier.
Yep.
But then, like, I'm sitting here trying to say that Provorov might be, like, if you had to make that decision again, or not again, but if that decision was moved from tomorrow to 6 months to a year from now, then Provorov's got an argument.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Sean Couturier and Claude Giroux's contracts are up at the same time. Is that correct?
It's close. I'll have to check.
I believe they're the same year, maybe 1 year off. If Claude Giroux leaves and you don't have Sean Couturier signed long-term or agreed to sign long-term or something in that nature, you might go Ivan Provorov at that point.
Maybe.
Rather than Couturier for a year.
They are both up in the same year, so they're both up in 2 years.
Okay, right. And, so if Claude Giroux decides
actually, funny enough, as I'm looking at it, if I could, if you reverse their two salaries,
it would kind of work out.
Sean Couturier became the $8 million guy.
Yeah, that's why I don't think it's
$4 million.
That's why I don't think Claude's contract is as much of a problem as people say it is, because Sean Couturier is if they both made six, Sean Couturier would still be on a steal and Claude Giroux would be fine.
And I think it's legitimately possible that Sean Couturier still gets a pass when we talk about the core, because he's on that contract.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a money thing. Half the time it's a money thing. If you're going to get paid $8 million a year, then you better show up and score a ton. That's the way people view it. And, you know, Sean Couturier in 2 years will be that guy, because, you know, let's put it this way.
Knock on wood.
He just won a major award.
Yep.
And then, you know, give him two more
he's on the radar. He's going to be nominated every other year, theoretically.
But give him two more years at 25 to 30 goals both years again, because it's starting to become the expectation for him. 70-point years, you know, whatever. Maybe he sets a new high and gets to 80 at one point. Maybe he turns into a point per game player. And next thing you know, he's that. And who knows? Does he throw another, you know, okay, one or two more Selke finalists in there? Another win, possibly, like at some point? Like, who knows? If he throws his name into the ring like that again, and now you're sitting there talking about two-time Selke winner Sean Couturier in a contract year with four straight years of 20 or more goals, which again, skewed number. And I said it that way because skewed number. This year he didn't get to 20. He got to 22, and he would have gotten to 25. So I would have been able to say three straight years of 25 or more goals, which could turn into four or five.
And the flat cap will be still a problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. There's still going to be a cap issue. I'm curious to see how many guys sign 1 or 2 year deals just to kind of break out of the flat cap era and try to hit free agency again.
To me, there's got to be a way for them to eventually, not to raise the cap, but to eventually allow players to structure things differently. Yeah, like
to backload contracts.
Because it's one thing to say that about this year, because at the end of the day, like I can go look and say, okay, you know what? The Flyers have approximately $9 million of cap space when you take away the expiring contracts. Yeah. And I don't see a lot of work that needs to be done.
No, the Flyers are in a decent spot.
like in terms of you can still fill out the roster without really tapping much into that. Like,
no,
there's it's a lot of restricted free agents that you plan to bring back.
And
how many of the unrestricted free agents do you really need to bring back? You know, it's the answer is going to be not many. You're going to turn to the next guy in the line, and it's going to be who's ready to take the leap to the NHL. That's what it's going to turn into more, and that's fine. But then 2 years down, like I can only imagine what happens 2 years down the line. And I wrote about it when I did an off-season primer, kind of to give people an idea, and I included the unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents of next year, because you have to think that far ahead. Dude, yep. Chuck Fletcher made a really great comment in his press conference when he said something about, for a change, you're thinking 2 to 3 year impact of contracts, not 12 month impact.
Right. And we talked about it a little bit on last week's show. I think Scott Laughton and Michael Roffel are two of kind of the bigger names that are up next year, at least up front. And
they're pretty much the only two, I think, actually, at this point.
Yeah, and then on the back end, is Hag up this year, or is he up next
year? Hag's restricted. He's restricted this year. So,
And he's restricted with arbitration rights, correct?
Yes, he is.
So he's getting...
He is. Phil Myers is not. Aube Kubel has arbitration rights as well.
Okay, so I think we're going to see it. Okay, Aube Kubel's a decent name up front, too. That's a fairly big name that's up this year.
It's a fairly big name, but it's also one that I don't think the market dictates needs to make a ton of money. Like, if you're coming off of a year
by $1 million type thing, I think that's kind of
probably a little, more than that, but yes, you're on the right
one
track.
And a quarter. I don't imagine it's going to be,
it shouldn't
above,
be much more than that, you know, especially for a guy who just made, and especially for a guy who made maybe $700,000, you know,
recently. he might make the max you're allowed to make, and still be buried in the AHL. Mm. That might be about where he's at. But either way, there's definitely some names that are up. Do you think the Flyers have a problem re-signing anybody? Right, like the only one that's weird for me is, well, there's two. Well, obviously there's Nolan Patrick, because who knows what's going on there, and we'll talk about the Chuck Fletcher quotes about him in just a second. And Phil Myers, because again, how much do you pay for a good season? And how much, you know what I mean? What do you do there? What do you think the Flyers do with Phil Myers?
You know, I don't think to answer the first part, I don't think you're going to have problems.
Okay.
And the reason I don't think they're going to have problems is because I think there has to be, going into this, a big understanding between front office and players alike, agents out there alike.
And this is going to be across the league.
Right, across the league. Yeah. That everybody is playing with less money than they expected.
Way less money.
Yeah. And that the implications of whatever you do are going to last. I feel like that was already something that was on the table when the Flyers discussed Oscar Lindblom's contract.
Yes.
Like, we want to pay you. And I think that's where the Chuck Fletcher comment then came from, where it's, I hope this is the smallest contract you sign.
Yeah.
Because I'm giving you 3 years, $3 million a year, because that's all I feel like I can give you right now.
And I think 3 years, the 3 year number was, I don't think that was an accident, right? We hear the cap's going to be flat for 3 years. But if you look at, if you take a step back and look at pre-COVID, we were looking at the next 3 or 4 years of salary cap and expecting there's a new American TV deal kicking in. There's other rights going on. There was real talk of the cap hitting 100 million within the next 4 or 5 years.
Continuing to progressively go up. Yeah. Like this, this year, I think it was supposed to be able to possibly to go to 84.
84. There was a chance it was going to 88 on the high end, but I think 84 was where it was more expected.
Usually they stick
to
the floor, not the ceiling. Yeah.
For sure.
So 84 is what I had kept hearing. And it was supposed to basically give you 2.5 to 3 million more.
Right. But I'm even talking about the long-term future, right?
Sure.
The American TV rights deal kicks in. That cap was expected to go up significantly, right? The Seattle money comes in and gets a big boost to the cap in terms of revenue sharing. So teams were kind of signing these longer term 5, 6, 7 year deals going, by the end of this deal, the cap's going to be $100 million. $7 million is tiny. And now instead we put a pipe on it. We put a restriction on it. And the next 4 years, probably, the cap's not going to go above 83. Right. So now in terms, $7 million is a lot higher of a percentage of 83 than it is of 100.
Sure. Now, good news, bad news out of that. So can you
imagine? The Flyers aren't super buried by it. That's good.
Not super buried. And also look at the names they have to re-sign. Like, if you look at the list of free agents, this is why I said, so good news, bad news. Good news maybe being, like, or good news out of the situation, which, or how it could have been helped the Flyers, is in the, you know, if you had bigger name players that you knew you had to sign and you were in a year where you had to kind of sit there and say, look, it's going to be a lot of bridge deals. It's going to be a lot of taking less money to start with because we just don't know where the cap is.
Ask players to take a cut.
Right. And it's, okay, so this is my point.
There's just less money going around.
It's a good year to ask players to take a cut, and there's not exactly a lot of players the Flyers have that you can ask to take a cut. Like, you're probably just going to pay them out the way you would have because there's just not much – like, there's not a guy who jumps out at you like that.
There are no huge deals to be signed.
Now, imagine –
you're not Tampa re-signing Braden Point.
Okay, so bad news.
Right.
Imagine this is last year, and you had Ivan Provorov and Travis Konecny hanging over your head needing new contracts. Oh, no, it's not, but I'm saying – It's a good news, bad news thing because it's a good news. You already locked them up. You're not even worried about this. But what would have happened if that was the situation? Would it have gone the positive side and they would have taken less to start with? Or would it have gone the other way and it would have been, well, here comes this really long conflict of contracts.
Right.
And I still want more money. I don't care that the cap is frozen,
yep.
You know, and flat. Just, you know,
there's a lot of ways that goes ugly.
Sure. And that's why I'm saying.
If Ivan Provorov and Travis Konecny are sitting there last summer and Chuck Fletcher is saying, oh, we don't have this money. The cap's going to be flat the next 3 years, blah, blah, blah. The most we can do is, you know, 4x4 for each of you.
Right.
You're in trouble. And that gets you one of two things. Either they say, no, listen, we're worth more than that. Bye, we're gone. Or they say, okay, but you're paying me at the end of it. You know, and we saw PK Subban do that in Montreal, right? He signed that nice team-friendly deal.
Right.
After a hefty negotiation, he ended up holding out in that 2012 shortened season. And he said, okay, I'm going to sign this team-friendly deal. But at the end of it, you're paying me. And then at the end of that bridge deal, Montreal said, okay, what do you want? And PK said, you're paying
money.
Me.
Yeah.
I told you it was going to be $9 million 3 years ago. It's $9 million, please.
Yeah.
I don't think
that this is going to be a problem for those. First of all, let's just wait.
Well, we don't have to worry about it because the Flyers.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have that problem.
Exactly. What I'm saying, and be happy that those guys are signed for the next 5 years beyond this one. This was only year one of 6 year deals for both.
I'm supremely happy with both those contracts.
And you're gonna like them as they go on because let's put it this way.
Ivan Provorov might win a Norris by the end of it.
I agree.
That's not impossible. There's a chance he's nominated twice.
Well, and Travis Konecny gave you exactly what you expect in terms of here he was
in the regular
same
season.
Number. Actually, I'm saying something that's not completely true there either because of the fact that he gave you the 24 goals he gave you the previous 2 years in a regular season that was cut short. He was on his way to 30.
No, he definitely stepped it up in the regular season.
And he became on the first year of a contract where he's making $5.5 million a year for the next 6 years. He gave you more than you might have expected turned into the guy that you now turned like there. Let's just say as disappointing as his playoffs were, he gave you a reason to want to see more from him in the playoffs because now you turned around, you went, not only did you get paid, but you showed it. You actually came out in the regular season and showed it. You didn't look like you missed a beat.
And by the way, looping all the way back to that alternate captain question or that captain question where you mentioned Travis Konecny's name, until he shows me something in the playoffs, he's only wearing an A.
Well, and that's fair. But see, here's the reason he's on my radar.
Okay.
He was a captain at
the junior level. And I don't mind putting him on the radar.
Yeah. He was a captain at the junior level. So he's got it in him to lead a team. It's just.
You would think.
And I just want to see – I'm like you. I want to see it in the playoffs. Like, if he had had as good of a playoff as Ivan Provorov had, then I'm thinking that conversation is much closer. That's why I think Provorov within – like, that's why I'm saying, like, another 6 months of this, another year of this for Provorov, and now you're 24 years old or 23 years old, but, you know, you're going into that, you know, pushing 25, you're hitting that prime of your career. I think that now – and not only that, but, I mean, in another year or two at most – what are the odds that, and I'm not going to, I don't want to say he's the oldest member of the blue line, but he's close to being the oldest member of the blue line.
He's getting there. Like, yeah.
And the most veteran because
he's
Robert
the captain
Haig
of
was in
the core,
Robert Haig
sure.
is older in age, but he does not have the playing experience, I don't think. Like he came
and he doesn't
up
have and, the minute experience by far.
Sure, exactly.
Nobody like chews up minutes totally like Ivan Provorov.
And maybe that's me hinting that I don't know that, like, obviously that's a hint to Justin Braun probably not coming back. Matt Niskanen probably only having a year left. Shane Goss is probably not
coming
back
for another year, for the record.
Oh yeah, and I'm not, and I do want to say I'm not opposed to Niskanen being here beyond that. If
me neither.
Shows me something again and take the less.
If he's willing to take the money that a 30 whatever year old needs to be taking.
Well, by that point it'll be 35.
That's what I'm saying. At that point you're signing 1 year deals and not for very much money. You're starting to get that.
And I'd have to see what free agency looked like next year and even the year, like even the year after that, because
that actually transitions as nicely. We heard from Chuck Fletcher that he doesn't expect the Flyers to be big players in free agency for the next couple of years. Right. We heard that
that's one of
his clips. And he said a lot of the Flyers acquisitions would probably be via being aggressive in the trade market
I don't even think he said he was going to get that aggressive in the trade market.
Or active in the trade market?
He said they'll actively work the phones, which is a kind way of saying we'll look, but we're not overly interested. Like, he wants to do this internally. And to an extent, internal is fine because...
Man, Chuck Fletcher has kind of a sweet job. He's living in the house that Ron Hextall built.
He is kind of living in the house.
Oh, man. He just said he doesn't want to sign free agents or make trades because he wants to sit on all the prospects that Ron Hextall drafted.
Right, and
man, he's living a good life right now. Oh, baby!
And look, the half of it is you want to see them go out and maybe try to get that one guy who you think could be a difference maker, and then the other half of you is saying,
"Who are we trading for him?"
Well, no, not even that. But the other half of you is saying, "Don't make another JVR deal," and in his case, don't make another Parise or Suter deal. Oof. Like, just sit back and maybe sit this one don't have it.
How many people thought that the Kevin Hayes deal looked like Parise and Suter deals?
Well,
when they signed it.
True.
The day they signed it, I heard people calling for Chuck Fletcher to be fired.
Well, all right. I definitely don't want you to sign a JVR deal because you don't sign a guy for $7 million a year for 5 years who's already in his 30s. You know, that's different.
I think he's going to end up as a member of the Kraken.
At least the Suter and Parise deals were while they were still in the prime of their careers, and he locked them up for the rest of their careers. And
those contracts have what, 6 years left on them?
Well, you can't even make contracts like that anymore.
I think they still have 6 years left on them.
Right, because you're not allowed to make 13-year deals anymore.
And Parise and Suter are already old.
Yeah, they are. Parise keeps coming up as a trade candidate all the damn time.
How do you move that contract? Like, I don't understand how you move one of the worst deals in NHL history. And that's not really his fault. He ended up having some injury whatever anyway.
So to the point of that, so the free agency player or working the trades or whatever, he wants to work on, it sounds to me like what Chuck Fletcher wants to do is he wants to work on the internal contracts that are expiring first, and then look at where they fill the gaps with other guys who are already locked up. And that's fine.
And that makes a lot of sense.
I saw an interesting question the other day that was posed on, I guess it was on the podcast that they have on NBC Sports Philly, which was, let's say that instead of looking at the list of unrestricted free agents and going, okay, you might try to do this, you might try to do this, whatever.
Right. You might look at this guy.
Sign one player who's an unrestricted free agent. Who do you sign? And there was a lot of mixed answers, and I think it's the easiest question in the world. I don't know why people thought it was a tough question. I think it's easy.
Okay, who's that?
It's Brian Elliott.
Yeah?
Because unrestricted
free agency market.
Well, and I know why people are hesitant with that, because I get it. You have a lot of shades of bad stuff with Brian Elliott from years past, before AV, before
– whole different animal.
Which is a whole different animal.
Yep.
And I get it. He's 35 going on 36, and he's aging.
He's also no longer starting 50 games a year.
And I don't want him to.
He's never, like, theoretically, he's never going to do it again.
I need a guy who can go in for 30 games now and be fine.
Yep. I need him to play. I need him to play once a week on the second half of a back-to-back against Minnesota.
And I need a guy. And I also need a guy who doesn't care about that. You know what I mean? Like,
Elliott is that guy.
Well, because let's put it this way. You could have done this with Cam Talbot, but Cam Talbot cared. Cam Talbot said, I want more starts.
Yep.
You're not getting more starts. Okay, I'll go somewhere else and find a place where I can get more starts. Brian Elliott might.
Brian Elliott likes it here.
I think exactly. Yep. And I'm thinking at this point in time that here's a guy who this is
we
almost
talked
a
about
help,
family men earlier.
This is
talk
a,
about a
this
family
is,
man. Brian Elliott is a family
oh,
man.
Oh, yeah, he is. This is a help me help you contract situation.
Oh, yeah.
This is a. I like, let me help you with your,
give me a million bucks to teach this kid.
I don't think it's going to be $1 million, but this is a, I don't care.
Whatever.
Oh no. I think it's gonna be more than that.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think he's going to make a little more than that. I don't think he's just going to cut from 2 to 1.
1.5.
But think about it this way. This is the way I thought about it too. They have about $9 million of cap space, like $8.9 million.
Yep.
And that's with everybody freed up. And that's with all of the free agents you have.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you have $9 million to sign 5 guys. That's the way I see it, roughly.
And nobody who's commanding 4, 5, 6 by themselves.
And if you have to add a sixth or can add a sixth, then great. This is what I mean when I say that. You have about $9 million, $8.9 million to sign Phil Myers, to sign Robert Haig, to sign Nick Aubé-Kubel, to figure out what the contract for Nolan Patrick's going to be, and to bring Brian Elliott back. And if bringing Brian Elliott back, think about this for a minute. Brian Elliott, the near $9 million in cap space includes the money that all those free agents were making from last year.
Right.
So give him the same $2 million. And what if he wants a raise slightly because he's been in the league a long time and he feels like he's doing you a favor?
Okay.
You know, what if he wants $2.7 million? And the $700,000 that you need to come up with was Derek Grant's contract from last year. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's a way to fill that gap and say, here he comes back. He makes more money than he did the year before. For and sure. All it cost you was $500,000.
A guy you rented anyway.
Let's say it's the exact amount that Derek Grant made or the half of what Nate Thompson made. Then, all right, fine. I give you that. And I still have the rest of it to work on the other 4 guys. I only cut into, you know, I still have over $6 to $7 million. To work with, to sign the other 4 guys who are all young, who are early in their careers, who could all easily get $1 to $2 million.
Yep. Who are all looking at 2-year bridge deals to try to get out of this.
And no one's getting more than a 1 or 2 year deal.
Yep. Cause everyone's trying to get out of this flat cap nonsense, the players and the team, everyone's trying to get out of this unscathed with no stupid contract.
And let's put it this way. Everybody wants to, because this is where the comment turns people off. The Fletcher comment. Everybody wants to see them go and get the guy who, when we talked a little bit about it, like we said, the Barzal guy who, you know, who comes out and just commands the shift from start to finish. You feel like you're scoring on it because he's there, and everybody wants that guy. And it's not easy to find.
Of course.
You know, and he admitted that. There's only a couple of those guys in the league. And he even said that everybody would love to add a scorer. It's just not that easy to do. And if it was that easy, then everybody would go do it. Like, that's basically what he said. He didn't say, not in those exact terms, but it was, everybody wants one. We just, you know, of course I'd like to have one, but I also don't want to give up a ton to get it either. You know, you could bring back the same exact team almost as this year.
Yeah.
Close to.
Honestly, yeah.
And construct the lines in a way that takes the spotlight off of the same guys that everybody keeps getting frustrated about. Think about it for a minute. Who at the end of the year, when the season ended last week,
yeah,
were we really talking that much about how Sean Couturier hadn't scored much in the playoffs?
Not really.
We were talking a little bit about Travis Konecny, and I get that, but was he the first guy that kept coming out of everybody's
Absolutely
mouth?
Absolutely not.
It was Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, JVR.
Yep.
Where were you? Where were you when we needed it the most, right? Like, that's what's talked about.
That's the story.
And my argument has, and I started with this last week too, is if Claude Giroux didn't play in the first line and was bumped back because of his age and his experience and where he is in his career, because now you're on the back nine.
Yep.
Is he the focus anymore? If you put, you know, Couturier's on the top line and Konecny's on the top line and you throw somebody else there, and I'll mention a name, which we already mentioned last week.
You
know what it is.
Yeah.
But I'll mention it for our listeners. Let's bump him down. Bump Voracek down. And start to realize that if they are not playing – first of all, if they're not playing the primary, something I didn't mention last week is – if they're not playing the first line minutes, they're probably getting better matchups.
Probably, yeah.
You know, if Claude Giroux's playing against the third line or on the third line against another team, what are the odds that he's, you know, everybody's throwing their first line out.
His legs are a little fresher, but everybody gets to take down the third line.
Sure. Well, sure, because everybody's throwing their first line out against Couturier and Konecny.
Because they have to.
Because they have to.
Because when you put that other guy on the left wing, you have to.
Sure, exactly. So picture this lineup, and there's not going to be a single name that everybody hasn't heard already from this year.
Yep.
Okay. Couturier on the top line, wingers are Oscar Lindblom and Travis Konecny.
That line feels like a line that's going to end up with a name. feels like Legion of Doom. It feels like LCB. It feels like Crazy Eights. It feels like a line that's going to end up with a name. Let's get working on it.
So that's the first line. Second line, Kevin Hayes, Joel Farabee, and Jake Voracek.
Sounds pretty good.
Because Jake Voracek, I think, still, you know, that play. Let me say this about Drew and Voracek for a minute. No matter how many years they have left, and I know that Voracek's got more years on his contract than Drew does, and Drew's probably going to sign beyond this, and you hope take a pay cut, stay hopefully in Philly for life and all that stuff like that. Do you not know what to expect from both of those guys in a regular season anymore? Pretty much. Claude Drew is going to give you 15 to 20 goals and about 50 to 60 points on average every year. He might give you more. He might give you around that.
And I will point out that through the first two lines, you have not mentioned his name yet, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'm just making sure that we're on the same page here.
No, and Jake Voracek gives you 10 or more goals a year and 40 plus assists every year without fail. So you know what to expect from them. You hope that they figure something out. And maybe this doesn't mean that they're involved on the first power play unit.
Of course. Yeah.
Like, mix and match, figure out what works best, figure out who's hot at the right time.
Claude Drew's not coming off the first power play unit for a while.
Right. But even then, if you get it clicking a little bit, because they did have moments in the regular season, they were a good power play unit in the regular season. And sometimes it,
for large
stretches, and believe me, I want to talk about this later because I want to talk about other teams that have good power plays and good special teams.
Yeah, we'll talk
and
about
have
the Dallas
high
Stars.
Expectations and aren't scoring goals.
Yeah.
Literally, there's a team out there that's saying the exact same things the Flyers were last 2 weeks ago. So third line. Claude Drew finally comes into the picture. On the left wing, by the way.
Okay.
Because
I
prefer him on the wing. With Morgan Frost and Nick Aubé-Kubel.
Okay.
And Aubé-Kubel is a little bit more interchangeable.
There's a name I'm thinking about that I'm surprised you haven't said Scott Laughton's name yet.
Okay, because as much as so I don't like Claude Drew on the right wing, and I think Scott Laughton's more of a left winger also.
Okay.
So here's a thought too, because I hear where you're going with it.
I'm just curious.
This is me thinking opening night of next season, and there's
about putting Farabee on the right side and putting Laughton there on the second line.
I like Farabee for the little bit more of experience that he has being in the top six.
Okay.
I think
I'm saying putting Farabee on the right side of the second line and making that second line Laughton, Farabee, Hayes.
I worry about Laughton being a top six guy. Laughton's got to be a middle six guy to me.
And get that.
I don't mean to bump him to the fourth line here per se.
It's just kind of where he ends up on a very good team.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing too. To this point, I'm leaving Nolan Patrick off of the four lines.
I think that's – you have to.
And making him the extra until I see him back. I mean,
a note on his contract. Is there any chance that it's just basically a one-year extension of his ELC and they just sign him to 1 year, same terms, essentially? It seems like it would kind of make a lot of sense for everybody involved.
I don't think it's going to be the same terms per se. 1 year sounds very reasonable.
Maybe a million bucks.
A million sounds
trade.
Better because
you can't give him any more than that, right?
I agree. Yes, you can't give him more than that. Here's the problem I have when I think about this. Everybody out there, there's a lot of people out there who are ready. And by the way, I do want to say something about this because I get it. He didn't play last year. He's been in and out of the lineup before with concussions and things like that. And I get it.
And he's been close since October.
Right. But listen. For everybody out there who labels him a bust, who is critical of that or whatever, think about the way you are with Oscar Lindblom and how you could have, on the day that he got diagnosed, said, done, career's over, done.
Yep.
You know, you could have been that. And instead we all backed him and said, he's coming back at some point. We know he is. He's a fighter. He'll be fine. He'll be back.
Yeah.
And then he did come back. Don't have that hopeless despair for a 22-year-old the way that you didn't with a 24-year-old. You know what I mean? This is still the dawn of his career, and I understand he's going through this. And Chuck Fletcher, by the way, finally admitted that hinted that it may have something to do with his concussion history.
Okay.
Which
Which
at least makes it feel a little bit better, and I get it.
Make me feel better, though, because concussion –
the comment's vague.
Because
the comment was vague.
Well, and how many careers has post-concussion syndrome –
Oh, well, sure.
Derailed, right? You look at, you know, even in the Flyers' recent history, you know, LaPerriere's on the bench.
I was say, you want to do recent history or do you want to just look up at the banners and pick the last guy who got his number retired? Like, that's a career that was cut short.
You know, Chris Pronger was kind of in that ballpark. Like, we have watched, if that's what it is, and that's where Nolan Patrick's NHL journey ends. And I don't want to say that because it's,
no,
it's,
I don't want to say that 22 either. I don't think it is where it ends.
But if it is, that's a real shame.
It sure it is. Absolutely.
Hopefully it's not. Obviously. I don't know if he'll ever be 100% of what he was. This might be something that plagues him forever. It's just one of those things, right? You know, you talk about 88, you just brought him up.
Yeah.
After a couple, you're never the same.
And look, we all want to see Nolan Patrick be what everybody thought he could be.
Absolutely.
And I just think it's too soon to give up on him completely.
And I haven't.
No. And that being said, I'm not willing to, like, I'm like Chuck Fletcher here. I don't want to throw him into a discussion of who the top 12 is going to be, because how do I know that? You know,
you,
I mean, and here's the thing. Even if I could, I think I'm still putting Morgan Frost in the third spot and I'm putting Patrick in the fourth.
I like Patrick at 4C. By the time the season kicks back off, he won't have skated in almost 2 years.
And there was a good thing. There was a good point that I saw about the Flyers when it comes to fourth line center. Because we always sit there and we've been saying for a while, oh, you don't want him to play fourth line center because that's a role. You don't want Morgan Frost to be your fourth line center. It makes no sense. You know, like, the way they balance the lines, though.
They just roll four lines anyway.
In terms of ice time, is much closer than ever before. Like,
how many times did the third line play dominant minutes in this playoff run? Where we talked about it.
Well, not just the playoffs,
but
over the,
was Nate Thompson on the ice?
And it wasn't just a playoff thing; it was an entire season thing.
Yeah, that's just how Alain Vigneault runs his bench.
Right, exactly. But since you, like, in other words, this isn't Dave Hackstall anymore, where the fourth line is getting 6 minutes a night.
Right.
This is 9 to 10 minutes a night, and it's still somewhat valuable. To be helping the team in that way.
Yeah, definitely a role.
Because
go out there and waste some time.
Because what Alain Vigneault has showed with this is that he's not afraid to put the fourth line out for longer if they're the ones driving things. Like,
definitely.
Obviously, there are times where we watch it and during the playoffs we're going, oh my goodness, Nate Thompson again.
Thompson, get off the ice.
Right, like, come on.
I yelled at him more than any other player.
Why him again when he's not driving it any more than this line is? So put your better player out, right? But there are games we've watched where you sit there and go, wow, you know, Michael Roffel's on your fourth line, and boy, they're really going tonight. They've gotten like 3 good scoring chances. I think you got to keep going right now.
Yeah, and then they do. And then Alain Vigneault almost always does.
Or you play to the strength of the team, you play to the strength of the game, which is if they've emerged in the third period with a 3-1 lead and you can still roll all 4 lines, then you're going to do it.
Yep.
And then one of those guys is not getting poor minutes. They're getting valuable minutes because they're trying to protect the lead.
Yeah, a lot of teams use their fourth line and some even their third line as kind of time wasters while their top 6 rest.
Right.
And Alain Vigneault is not one of those guys.
No, he's not.
And going back to your lineup, it's not supremely top heavy, right? Like, you have Claude Giroux on the third line, you have Scott Laughton on the fourth line, and I don't think you ever read off your fourth line.
No, but I'm going to.
But either way, you have a balanced approach, and that's kind of what you need when you're running Alain Vigneault's system. You can't do what Boston does and put your best 3 scorers on one line, your next 2 on your second line, and then your bottom 6 just rots. You're going to get killed if you run 4 lines out like
Boston.
That.
Boston was better with it when they still had Noel Achari and could run out Achari with Corrali. Like, holy crap, what a fourth line that was.
Oh, that was wild. You
know, I mean, that was a dangerous fourth line. And when they lost one, it makes a difference.
I think that's a lot of the reason they didn't make it further in the playoffs this year.
So temporarily, I have Scott Laughton centering the fourth line. That's why I didn't put him on
a wing.
I don't mind that. Because temporarily, I have him centering one.
But if Nolan Patrick's there, I assume that Nolan Patrick plays 4C and Scott Laughton swings out to the wing.
He swings out to the wing. And again, depending on the flexibility of the play, like, I'm assuming that based on what I saw, like, Laughton always played left wing. Where Faraby always played left wing and Giroux's always played left wing. So I'm not going to put them on the right side if I don't know that they play it. So if I don't know that they play it, then I don't want to assume that. Like, I'd love to sit there and tell you Scott Laughton, of course, is a third liner on this team.
I imagine Scott Laughton is versatile enough that he could probably play on the right side if you needed him to.
Probably. Well,
he's just got that toolbox, right? He's just got that thing.
He could. But so the other, and who are the other ones I'm missing? So Michael Raffles on the fourth line also. Okay. And then I'm trying to remember who else I had on the fourth line. Now that
By the way, I'm surprised Michael Raffles made it through this decade without getting an A on his sweater at some point.
Oh, Raffles playing fourth line right wing. And the other guy I had on the line was JVR.
Okay.
On the left.
Okay. So who comes out if Patrick's available? Probably Obey Kubel on the third line, and you just move some things around.
Either Obey Kubel, or I'm even willing to go with Raffle.
Okay, yeah, I don't mind Raffle as a Raffle, or
the guy who was already coming out of the line to begin with. It could be JVR.
I see that. Yeah.
It's an expensive, healthy scratch, but I get it. Like, if he doesn't fit, I really just feel like JVR is just not a fit for this team anymore.
You think he's gonna Andrew McDonald a little bit here, just in terms of his contract and the time left on it, and he just doesn't have a spot.
He's not gonna go down. I mean, like, not go down to the minors. But
I think he's gonna go to Seattle. I think even if it costs, I think
he's the most likely to go to Seattle.
I think the Flyers are gonna be very high on the list of teams most likely to trade a first round pick. As I mean, part of the Seattle process.
Possibly, yeah.
And I don't necessarily think they want to, but I think.
Think they want to. Chuck Fletcher doesn't want to give up assets, but
you do that to get rid of a JVR and save Scott Laughton or Michael or you know, even a guy like Michael Raffle, honestly. But you got guys coming up that you got to protect, and we're not that far away from that, right? Like, Seattle's after next season, whenever next season is.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, there's only two guys on the roster who I think are likely to go to Seattle at this point. Like, if you can,
you probably just signed Brian Elliott to 2 years now so that you have him for Seattle. Cause you have to have a goalie to expose.
You do, but I don't know any team that's going to go out there and necessarily take him, because by the time you would, he'll be 36 going on 37.
I don't think you take him, but the Flyers need someone to expose. So I think we talked about Brian Elliott as a free agent this summer, and I think maybe you get his number down for stability if you're getting him over 2 years, or maybe you just sign him 2x2. But either way, I think you probably sign him for 2 years. I mean, him to expose for Seattle.
I mean, in another year or two, they could always, let's just say, they could sign Alex Lyon for 2 years and,
no, they could,
and say,
you're right.
And say, here, do you want him?
I forgot, you know? Alex Lyon was, Alex Lyon might not be eligible. I'm not really sure how those work. I think you have to expose somebody with NHL experience.
But
I'm not sure about that. Either way, I don't think Seattle would end up taking him. But we did want to talk about the other series.
Yes, we do.
Right, because we heard about the Chuck Fletcher comments, and we talked about Couturier for the Selkie, and that's kind of all our Flyers news. So the bubbles have condensed. There is now one bubble. The NHL has moved all their operations in terms of on ice to Edmonton for the remainder of the playoffs, where we have the Dallas Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference Finals. And obviously the Tampa Bay Lightning and New York Islanders in the Eastern Conference Finals. And boy, did they start off the Eastern Conference Finals strong. Tampa Bay put up 8.
I'm doing so well with my picks, aren't I?
Listen, I don't have any remaining teams on my original bracket, so it has gone poorly. I think I had Colorado, St. Louis, and Philadelphia, Washington as my final four.
Wow.
So it didn't go great. But have you been watching these series? What do you think? What do you think about Edmonton hockey?
Well, I think it's been pretty good, all things considered. I mean, it depends on which series you want to talk about, I guess, because I know that there's thoughts on one series over another.
Well, the thing is, I'm still just a little salty at the Islanders. And, you know, when I saw that they lost 8-2, I was pretty happy about it.
Oh, I know. No. Like, here's what I'm saying about that. Like, to me, the Eastern Conference Final has delivered on what I expected. The West, not saying the West hasn't delivered on what I expected, but the West, I think, finally gave us two really good games in 3 and 4. And yes. 1 and 2 were some of the most boring games I think I've watched in a long time in a conference final.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and listen, game one of that series, I think is a mold of what is working for Dallas. Like, I give them credit for playing that style and really handing Vegas something I don't think they'd ever seen before.
And at time of recording on Sunday morning, Dallas is currently up 3-1 in that series. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had Vegas in 6, so I lose.
Well, listen, you might still get Vegas. You never know.
I will say, if there is, especially after last round, where there were three teams that had 3-1 leads that ended up playing in a game seven, if there is a team that I think can actually not just come back from down 3-1 but finish the job, it's Vegas at this spot.
Yep.
Now, that being said, I think Vegas is being handed something. I mean, Vegas
– do you want to talk about the wildest first 3 years in franchise history if that happens?
Cup final. If that were to happen.
Cup final, five-minute major against San Jose.
The first round.
3-1 down.
Wow. To make a cup final.
Wow. That would be incredible, especially if they do the thing at that point.
Yeah.
Like, especially if they go on to beat Tampa, because let's face it, it's going to be Tampa.
I feel like this Western Conference final takes a look at what happened to the Flyers in the second round and totally debunks, like, the fact that that's what loses team series in a way. It helps that cause and it hurts that cause at the same time, because Dallas has 6 goals in 12 periods and 31 seconds and has a 3-1 series lead. At the same time, Vegas has 6 goals in 12 periods and 31 seconds 3-1. And is down 3-1. Yep. And the reason I pointed out is because I'm saying that there is a way, like, teams can go out and do exactly what the Flyers had to do against Montreal to win that series and play 1-0, 2-1 games and win. Obviously, like, Dallas is doing it right there in front of us. And Dallas is not only doing it in that sense, but tell me you didn't expect Vegas to score on that 5-on-3 in the third period last night.
I absolutely did.
Like, that was the spot. I'm waiting for somebody to cash in.
Yep.
And it's everybody. And I think
Anton Mark Stone, Hudobin is going to get paid.
Oh, he's going to get majorly paid. In a year where, like, and I was texting you guys this in the group, in a year where you can't get paid, he's going to get paid.
Somebody's going to give Anton Hudobin too much money.
I even said there's two that are getting huge money.
Hudobin,
it's Anton
Hudobin
and Jacob Markstrom. Yep, they're going to absolutely get.
I don't necessarily think Markstrom does, because I think Vancouver is going to sweetheart him into signing a decent little deal.
But
I agree that if he hit the market, he would get eight. He would probably get $8 million.
I think he's also going to possibly try to hit the market and then realize it's not all it's cracked up to be this year. And then
nobody wants to give a 30-year-old goalie with one good season 10% of their cap.
If you thought you were going to get eight and Vancouver's there with four and willing to do that for like 2 years, just until, because Demko is probably going to be the guy in the next 2 years.
And I think that might be the team.
Or at least
Seattle,
he's
going to
be the guy for some.
From.
It could be. That's what I'm talking about. There's enough
Vancouver
teams that have
is
controversies.
The team that Seattle's going to get their goalie from. At least one of them.
There's enough teams that have that kind of difficulty and that controversy that it's going to make it really low. Or not
How
even
nice is it that the Flyers aren't one of them? For the first time ever, the Flyers know who their goalie is, and it's cool.
They do know who their goalie is, but I also think, like, in other words, I also think they're not dangling a second guy. Like, that's what I mean by controversy, too, is like,
no, I know.
There's not a second guy who you go, well, he could be it, too. Like, and he's that good. Like,
right.
Ryan Elliott, when he came in, gave them a shot to win just about every single time he played.
For sure. Yeah.
And at that point in time, can be considered a guy who someone else would look at as a starter. But
when I think of league average goaltending, people talk about the mythical league average goaltending. When I think of that, I think of Brian Elliott. And that's not a bad thing. That is solid.
Yeah.
Right? And that's kind of what Brian Elliott has kind of always been. And we talked about him earlier, kind of staying in that role. I honestly thought Anton Hudobin was that guy until the last 2 or 3 years. And he's going to come out and get paid. Markstrom's probably going to get paid if he hits the market.
Do you know what other team is? Do you know what other team could have trouble goaltending wise when it comes to the expansion draft?
Okay.
The Rangers.
I don't even know if that's much trouble. I think that takes
trouble
off
their hands,
because they just get, here you go, you make the choice for us.
Well, no, and I'm saying that in the sense that Lundqvist not even being a part of the picture, but you go back and forth between Shesterkin and Georgiev. And both of them look pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, that's just one that I can see, you know, that I can see being something. And
Yeah, I just don't necessarily think they look at it as a huge problem, because I think the Rangers like both guys pretty evenly.
No, and I think the Rangers are going to protect the younger one. They're going to protect Shesterkin.
Well, it depends on kind of how the upcoming season goes.
Well, yes, it does, but that's my guess today, is that's who they would protect.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. But so you think the Stars finish this out, or do you think the Vegas does actually come back and maybe force a game seven? And, you know, where do you think we go here?
I think Dallas finishes it off, and I think they finish. First of all, I think they finish it off because it's fresh in your mind. You just like Dallas has done, and I saw a tweet about this, and I think it's a good point. They've done a really good job, especially from a coaching change in the middle of the year, by the way, to adjust to playing styles. You know, they had to play one way at the very beginning.
They've
done
a fantastic job managing momentum.
When they played in the first round, and I'm trying to remember who they even played in the first round. It feels like it was like a year ago, the way the first round.
Oh, it sure does.
Their first round was, I'm looking it up really quick, because they played Calgary. Okay, yes. And Calgary had moments.
They upset Calgary. A lot of people had Calgary coming out of that.
Yeah, I'll say. And Calgary won game one.
Yep.
You know, they won game one, and then Dallas really – actually, Calgary won game one and then won game three. It was 2-1 Calgary after three games. And then Dallas just came back with –
Dallas has been a resilient team, and I don't think enough people have talked about them.
Sure,
People have looked at the West, and they've been talking all playoffs about Vegas and St. Louis and Colorado and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, sneaky Dallas is up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals.
But Calgary was going to be one of those teams that tried to work you a little bit, yeah. You know, that wanted to bring a physical edge, and they withstood that, and they won that series. Then you had Colorado, who is all offense all the time, and it's speed, it's transition, it's counterattack, it's everything. Like, and Dallas adjusted to that somehow. And yes, did they get burned in games 5 and 6? Sure they did. And look, let's not take away that Colorado was 3:08:40 away from winning game 7 and pulling off that comeback, and they doesn't came matter. Right back down. It doesn't yep. matter. They came right back down and scored another goal. So their resiliency level is really good.
And you look at the veteran leadership on that team. I tweeted this out
last night, because I said Jamie Benn's had an outstanding series and playoffs.
Yep, and he's not even
remotely close to the team's top Conn Smythe candidate.
And you know, we talked a lot about captaincy on this show, and Jamie Benn shows better than anybody else. It doesn't matter how much you produce; it matters when you produce, in a lot of ways. And you got to produce, got to produce volume, but
sure,
when you produce matters more. And he has shown it, and he's been fantastic, and he has been the epitome of captaincy through a playoff run.
He has, and you know what? I'm going to look up a couple of their numbers too, because
yeah,
to me, let's put it this way. Here's another thought behind it. Look at their point production in the playoffs to this point, and Jamie Benn's got 17 points in three rounds of the playoffs, and I guess this includes the round robin as well.
Right.
But all right, so three round robin games, a 6-game series, a 7-game series, and so far 4 games. So that's 17 playoff games plus it's 20 playoff games. So 17 points in 20 playoff games. Denis Gurianov has come in, not, I don't want to say from out of nowhere, because he was a former first overall or first round pick. So he was a Dallas first round pick.
Yeah.
But he's come in and become a goal scorer. And realistically, hasn't done any of it in this series from an offensive standpoint. That line really has been shut down.
Yeah.
Exactly. Joe Pavelski is having one of those veteran step up moments. And
that's your biggest move. That's the biggest move they made.
Joe Pavelski's one of them. And you know what? You almost start to root for this team for that reason.
I'm rooting
for
this team.
This might be his shot right here.
Get him a cup.
But then I look at the two names that sandwich those three in terms of point production.
Okay.
Miro Heiskanen has 22 points in the playoffs.
Picked right after Nolan Patrick.
Yeah. We had to go there. And then John Klingberg has 14 also. This team plays so well from the back end.
So good.
that you actually like, there are a lot of times in this series, and this is why the number is what it is. It's why it's 6 goals in 4 games and somehow averaging a goal and a half per game, they're winning 3-1 in a series.
Yep.
It's because of the fact that there are nights where I've watched these games and I don't feel like Tyler Seguin is close to scoring a goal in that game, or Radulov is close, or Ben's been a little bit more. Okay, but then go to the next line. I don't feel like Gurianov looks like he's going to score, or Rupe hints, or, you know, go down the list. Corey Perry goes out there and looks like he's out there just to boss people around and bully people.
Corey Perry, hello.
No, I know. Okay, and, you know, others. Radek Foxa, like another guy who had some production in the regular season, doesn't look like he's close to scoring a goal in the series sometimes, because they literally go out there and they go, let's get two.
Yep.
Let's get 2 goals and then just put up the wall. Vegas doesn't get anywhere near Anton Khudobin. They just don't.
Nope.
This is a complete perimeter game from Vegas, and it's why they've struggled on the power play. It's why when they have scored, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at all the box scores really quick, but I know like Vegas's goal last night was on a power play. So yeah, that's 1 out of 6, and I believe there's more than that, you know?
It's crazy because coming into this series, Vegas had the reputation as kind of a big, heavy, physical team. And Dallas just pushing them around. Like, Dallas looks like they might – they're going to give whoever comes out of the East a hard fight.
Sure, absolutely.
This cup final, and God forbid Vegas comes back, obviously mm-hmm. they'll give. Like, this cup final, no matter what, is going to be fantastic. I don't think there's going to be a bad...
There was a really funny thing about, because they said something about, I think, which game was? I guess it was Game 3 of Dallas-Vegas.
Okay.
Competed with the first night of the NFL.
Okay.
So the ratings were way down from like a year ago at the time. And obviously things are skewed because
of course, everything's weird.
Well, no, but like, hello, the Western Conference final of the Stanley Cup playoffs is happening on the night that they open the NFL season.
Right.
Like that doesn't make any sense in a normal world, obviously,
no.
but nonetheless, I wanted to sit there and also go, you do realize that there's nobody, not really anybody on these teams collectively that make you go, got to turn on the TV to watch them.
No,
you know?
Not really.
And Tampa's one of the closest because Tampa's got Kucherov and
Prop,
Dallas.
They might have Stamkos close back.
And listen, and Dallas has, you know, Dallas still has the Sagan Ben combo, which yes, they have
you'll
star
draw
power
a certain
on their
market.
Team. Well, but and well, you'll yeah, you'll draw a market.
You'll
basically,
draw a certain market, a certain demographic.
Right, but like nonetheless, like that's their star power. Vegas has a good amount, but like again, Vegas doesn't really have like to me. I'm sorry, Jonathan Marchessault is not a household name in the league. About
right.
The closest thing you've got, I would
Marc-Andre
think
Fleury is probably
Fleury
the
is one, but
star.
One of the other like again, what maybe the other ones are, you know, Mark Stone's starting to form that reputation, and Pacioretty kind of has it from Montreal.
Okay,
you know that's about it. And then what about the Islanders? I mean, Barzal's trying to carve himself out into that guy, but the Islanders are really again a team of grinders. Yep. So if you've got a bunch of like. The Democrat
New York Dallas will not be a high profile series.
Bingo. I almost yeah. And see here's the thing. I know people sit there it's the watch my sport argument, you know, oh my God, we can't have an Islanders Stars final because no one will watch it. I'll be watching it because and I will be watching it alertly knowing that the if that's what it is, it's the two teams that picked a style that worked for them
yeah.
in this playoff run.
And we've seen a couple of teams kind of go towards that style. We've seen a couple of teams play that style, right?
Right, and that's how you got there. I mean, it's just yep. It's how they got there. Now,
the phrase "defense wins championships" exists for a reason.
Yeah. Now, I want to shift gears because we touched on the Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals,
yeah.
And once we release this episode, obviously, full disclosure, Game 4 will be over. We don't know what happens.
Right.
In game 4.
We don't know the result.
It's the classic. It's the classic. It's we're doing what we did with the Flyers Islander series, where we're taking guesses.
Yeah.
Although we were
right about Game 4 in that case. We did know the Flyers were going to get shellacked.
Did they really get shellacked, though?
Like, listen, they lost. That's all that matters.
No, but I'm saying, did they really get shellacked, or is this, you know, because let's put it this way. First of all, the Flyers, by the way, I do want to hint to something with the Islanders, because I thought about this the other day. And I thought about this in light of the – because I know the idea of what I said about the lineup. Bringing back mostly the same group of forwards. Basically, the only new guy I actually injected in there was Morgan Frost Everybody else was
he's
there.
He's not even really new.
Right. He's not even really that new. And defensively, I took Justin Braun out and tentatively threw Shane Gostisbehere somewhere in there, assuming he's still there.
I don't mind that at the moment.
With the thought behind it of if anybody else were to leave for whatever reason, I guess it would be Mark Friedman. I guess it might be fine. Igor Zamula.
Yeah. If Zamula's ready, I'd like to see what he can
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it might be, if that's the way it's going to go, it might be that kind of internal competition.
Yeah, we'll see what camp looks like.
But
I'll be interested to see that battle in camp.
But I looked at it and I thought about it because I'm like, if Oscar Lindblom comes back the way that he was at the start of this year and becomes a player again,
no reason to think he won't.
Well, exactly. Unless he can, you know, I'm saying from an ability standpoint, he'll be there at the start. But from an ability standpoint, like, I don't know how eagerly you put somebody like that on your first line when he's played two games after a cancer battle.
Fair.
You know, like, I want him there eventually. But I don't know if he's going to be there. Couturier will, Konechny will, and then balance the rest of the lines out. I want to see Joel Farabee another year older.
I sure do too.
You know, I want to see if Scott Laughton carries that some of this over. I want to see Abe Kubel play the same kind of role. I want to see Konechny take another step even himself. You know,
I have a bit of a hot take about Joel Farabee here, real quick.
Go ahead.
If Joel Farabee plays with the line you proposed, Kevin Hayes, Jake Voracek, he scores 25 goals next year.
I'd take you up on that.
Okay.
In a full season. I'd take you up on that. I think you're not too far off for sure.
And I think there's a chance he pushes 30 and he really starts doing special things.
I think something else needs to happen for that to happen. And it has nothing to do with him playing with somebody or anything like that. I think he needs to add some size for that to happen.
I think there's a possibility, and that's why I think it's
a good chance he's going to do it because he's a determined kid and he's going to do what he has to do.
On a line with 6'5" Kevin Hayes and big old Jake Voracek, there might be room to spare for Joel Farabee whether he adds size or not.
But here's where I was thinking this though too. So take some of the core guys out of it without mentioning the names of everybody that gets talked about. Bring back a group that has Oscar Lindblom at full health, presumably. Travis Konechny emerging to a top role. Joel Farabee, who's 20 years old, who just got his first playoff experience and didn't look terrible.
Yep.
Nick Aubé-Kubel. You know, like, again, Morgan Frost. You know, all these types of guys. You know, think about them. Think about the guys who maybe to come. If you have Nolan Patrick back at full health, if you can tap into another one of these prospects who's lingering down below, go to the defenseman. Provorov still not even in his prime yet. Sanheim Myers back, not even in their primes yet. You know, Zamula in the waiting. You know, things like that. And even if you don't take Zamula in the waiting, take Zamula out from that grouping I just said. I just gave you 9 players that are all going to be on your team next year.
Yep.
Oh, hang on a minute. I'll jump to 10 because I forgot the goalie.
Yep.
So Carter Hart, 22.
Yeah, and that's exactly
10 of the 20.
And that's exactly how I fill my roster out when I'm playing NHL 20. You put all the young guys up top so they get the experience and the ice time and they grow.
But this is why I was talking or I wanted to talk about it from this kind of the standpoint because yes, I know 2 weeks ago when we were sitting there preparing ourselves for 3-1 down in a series to the Islanders, we went kind of doom and gloom.
Last year we were
still sitting there licking the wounds from the end of the season. You know, that's why it's such a promising team because I just gave you half of your 20-man roster potentially without tapping into and think about
your names.
And I didn't mention Sean Couturier. I didn't mention I kept Scott Laughton out of it even. I kept Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek out of it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to touch those guys at this point because I don't want to say that. And again, by giving those, I didn't say Kevin Hayes.
Right.
So what I do, I just gave you 5 more. And oh, by the way, Sean Couturier is in his prime.
Yep.
Kevin Hayes is in his prime. You know, that's 2 more who you expect big things from. And now I'm going to Giroux, Voracek, JVR. If Giroux, Voracek, and JVR become 13, 14, and 15 in the names that I mentioned when talking about this team,
they're on
Matt Niskanen and Brian Elliott are in there too. Obviously, assuming you keep Elliott, now we're up to 16, 17. I'm asking for 3 players, 3 to fill out the roster. And you can fill out 3 with whatever you
need
to
be great. Right.
That's what I'm saying. So you can fill out the 3 with, I didn't say Robert Hague and I didn't say Shane Gostisbehere and I didn't say Michael Roffel.
I do have one more take about hot take about next season's lineup. I believe next season will also bring us the return of Ivan Provorov and Shane Gostisbehere as your top pair.
Possibly. I don't know. That is a very hot take.
And you know what? After what I saw from Ghost in the postseason, I don't know if I'm upset about that.
I don't know either. I don't know whether or not I don't know if you want to give him one more shot and see if it works. But, you know,
I think at worst, it's an audition for Seattle or for
it could be
trade bait. But either way.
So I want to tie that into the Islander series for a minute. So because everybody – we made it sound like, you know, with the doom and gloom talk and licking your wounds after the series is over.
Right.
It feels like they're a mile away from getting that point. And I just mentioned all these other guys who are going to be back, no question about it, because they're all young. They're all locked up on young contracts. And you expect more from them. You expect better from them. And in the entire series, in the entire Islander series, this is how close the Flyers were to potentially winning the series. Game 7 was the only game after two periods where it felt like they had no shot.
I agree.
They were down 3-0, and you went, it's
over.
Every
other game, they're a bounce away from being close.
But yeah. Game 1, you're down 1-0 going to the third period. Game 2, you have a 3-1 lead. Game 3, here's the real big one with this. Game 3 should have been 1-1. It was 2-1 because you coughed it up in the last minute, final 10 seconds of the period.
Gave up the backbreaker.
And that was the backbreaker. But it should have been a tie game. One goal could win it. Game 4, it was a tie game. It could have been 2-1 the other way where you're leading.
Yep.
Game 5 was another one where it was 2-1 after 2. They scored early in the third.
And
game 6, the one again, and here's another one. Here's the swing. Should have been 3-3, was 4-3 Islanders. Yep. But I just gave you in those six games, I just gave you a 3-goal swing. Like, essentially, the Flyers get one goal at the end of the second period in Game 4, and if they don't allow that one at the end of the second in Game 3 or that one at the end of the second in Game 6, do those games even go to overtime?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Game 2,
you just went clean.
Right. And so all of that type of stuff. And that's
– And I think a lot of that is why so much criticism has befallen the top six. Because when – What we currently see as the top six.
Right.
Because when you're tied after two, you expect your leadership core to come out and play well in the third period. And we got no goals from Travis Konechny and, you know, no goals from Claude Giroux for a while there. And you know what I mean? So I think that's where a lot of the leadership criticism came from, is because you're in these tight situations deep in the game and your guys aren't clutching up. You know, your leadership core isn't coming through.
And I do appreciate Chuck Fletcher saying that the thing that was most disappointing was the lack of defensive detail that they had throughout the regular season. Like, to me, that is the big difference, because that helps start your breakouts. It helps get you going in with a head of steam.
Definitely.
It allows you to be better offensively. And you could have won the series without being the best offensive team. You didn't have to outscore them tremendously to do that. You just need to prevent, like, a cut down on a couple mistakes that ended up in the back of the net, and you probably find a way, you know, bad turnovers, things that lead to transition plays. You probably find a way to win way more often. They were a very opportunistic team. And I hated game one of the Eastern Conference Finals to an extent. Like, look, I hear you. The Islanders get shelled, and it's something that you look at and you go, okay, you know. The wounds still hurt, so you were like, that feels good.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I'm so glad that it hasn't colored the rest of the series to this point, because I'm glad it's an anomaly because of the fact that,
because if they were getting embarrassed, the Flyers loss feels worse because you lost
exactly
to this
team. Like, to me, I this is what I tried to say after the game when we were on here last week, was this team is going to give Tampa fits, and
they have,
and Tampa really probably shouldn't have somehow found a way to win game two. Probably shouldn't have. I really thought the Islanders were poised to win in overtime.
Definitely.
And they made three big mistakes on that last shift that cost them the game. And then game three to me was everything that we saw from that Islander series against the Flyers. It was everything. And yes, Tampa put together a little bit of a comeback, and it doesn't mean it's, and believe me, I don't think it's impossible. I mean, the Flyers had the claw back in game six. How many times, you know what I mean? Right. Like somewhere you got to dig deep down and go, boy, they're not letting up. I got it. We got to find it.
Well, they've played game three. And obviously we mentioned before that we are recording before game four. I'm not going to necessarily ask you to predict game four, but who wins that series? Who goes to the Stanley Cup final out of the East? Because we'll know that by our next show.
It's a tough call because we already did the other one. Yeah. Because yeah. I think Dallas.
We both think Dallas is going to close that out. Yeah.
I just think they're poised after already being in a 3-1 and nearly blowing it the first time.
I think they know better.
Yeah. Not only do they know better, but there's something different about a series when, you know, Colorado wasn't frustrated scoring wise. It was, we're scoring. We're just giving up an awful lot at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, I think that Vegas is frustrated from a scoring standpoint. And Vegas is saying a lot of the things the Flyers were saying. Oh, it's going to come.
Definitely.
We're there. We're just not finishing. Like, and Vegas is a number one seed. Vegas is a team that everybody picked to go to the final from the very beginning, not just, hey, oh, look, they got the one seed.
Dallas is a team that a lot of people didn't have making it out of the first round.
And if Dallas goes on to the final, then good for them, because after you beat Calgary, to go against number two and then number one in the West, you know, there's a part of me that wants if Dallas is going to go, that wants Dallas to play Tampa, just so that you can say you beat the two on the other side, but realistically one of the top two the entire way. Like Colorado and Vegas were getting that talk from the very beginning of the year.
For sure.
And you beat that. And if you beat them to get to the final and then you beat Tampa, who everybody, I mean, let's put it this way, after
you're
Tampa,
slaying some
when giants. Tampa won game two, the way that they did, especially when it was massively outplayed for a lot of the game and still found a way to win.
Right.
My timeline blew up on Twitter with it's Tampa's time.
Yep.
Like it's just their time.
The destiny
here. It is there. It's their time.
Well, is that what you think happens?
I'm sticking by my pick. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be six anymore. I don't know if it's going to be six. And here's the thing. I'll discount the in six portion of my pick in a sense that I really didn't think the Islanders were going to look that bad in game one from a travel standpoint. Like, yes, the travel was going to affect them in some way, but people are acting like Tampa made the trip over there the week before, like when they won. Tampa flew over on Saturday before the Flyers and Islanders played in game seven. Tampa made the trip. And when it was over, the Islanders made the trip
right afterward. Yep.
Like it wasn't that far out that it happened that way. So to me, that's not an advantage. The only disadvantage is that while Tampa didn't have to play hockey for 6 days, the Islanders played two overtime games, one that went double overtime, and had to play in a game seven where you better have the intensity level.
Exhausted.
So yes, were they tired? Is it because they traveled? No, it's because they played a lot of extra hockey.
Right.
I mean, let's just say the Islanders bordered on an 8-game playoff series against the Flyers.
Yeah.
And
with all the
Lightning,
extra
and the Lightning had to play a couple of overtime games in there, I think, but nothing.
Again, having several days off.
They didn't even play. They didn't even play five or not five and a half, but like they came close to playing six games. Maybe.
Right. But having several days off is such a huge.
Exactly. And having that time to just practice, you know, things like, I do think it's really awesome now that everybody's in the bubble, because like, I think they said Pat Maroon was watching the Dallas Vegas game the other night. Like it's great, but not just watching, but watching it from the arena. It's like,
I know you should
go.
Be. Yeah.
Go like that. If that's what you're going to do, then do it. But
I would love to get both other teams show up, put one team behind the benches, the other team behind the penalty box, and just treat it like a college game, right? Where you
that's
have
funny.
Fans from one team on one side, fans, but all the Vegas Golden Knights are wearing Tampa Bay Lightning shirts, and all the Dallas Stars are wearing New York Islander stuff. That would be great. That would be a lot of fun.
But yeah, I'm gonna stick to the pick. I'm gonna stick to the Islander pick because
I think I'm going Tampa.
I think this is why I'm gonna stick to it. I think that after game two, Barry Trotz basically said like it's gonna turn. I think it's what he said. Like this, it's gonna turn.
They're wearing them down.
Right. And I've never believed somebody more when using something that could have been used as like a cliche to a sense. Like I've never believed somebody more when he said it because of the fact that like to me, this I thought that game two was so much closer to what we had seen, and the fact that it took Tampa everything to get two goals in that game. I'm like, that's it. Yep. That's how hard you have to work against them, and all the offense. And granted, Tampa's also now got to really figure out what they're going to do, because no Stamkos for the entire series, so they say.
I mean,
that's what they said, but we don't know if that's the real
truth. If that series goes six, I think Stamkos is taping his leg up and going out there.
And then the wonder of, but then the wondering about Braden Point and if he's good. They obviously, you know, the game that they did, let's just think about the impact of the game where they lost Killorn to the suspension, because that happens in game two. They find a way to win. And by the way, find a way to win with going from 11 forwards in the lineup to nine, because Killorn gets tossed and Point gets hurt, and there's now nine forwards playing. And they found a way to win
forwards,
that game.
Nine forwards without Braden Point. And Alex Killorn, you know,
and still
no
Stamkos,
six.
Obviously. So, like, talk about, like, that's a line in, of its own. You know, you could put Stamkos, Point, and no, they're all centers. I get it, but you could put them all on a line and sit there and say, "Listen, look at our power play. Look how awesome it is."
And Point,
you know,
Killorn,
or whatever.
And Point and Killorn will be back, or you know, Point and Killorn will be back for Game Five. You know, Point, I think Tampa wins the series as it goes longer, right? Well, they get all those people back. I think Tampa. I think Tampa takes this one. I think the Islanders maybe win one more game. But Tampa just has so much more talent. And you're really seeing it. Even though the games are close, even though the Islanders are in them, Tampa just looks like a better team.
I'll say this too. I mean, we're doing it before game four.
Right.
If this comes out 2-2, and I really think it will.
It could. Yeah, for sure.
I need this. If the Islanders play the same way in game five and either
come
away with the win,
they've played that way for the first 90 games of this season.
Well, like,
I think
listen,
they
like,
might continue it.
No, I know, but I'm saying, you know what I mean? Like, to hold them off scoring wise, more,
right.
It was more of what I mean. Like,
if they're effective.
Yeah. Right. Because there are times like Tampa's still getting some of those opportunities. Like the way the game two finished, that's a partial breakaway late in the game. And then, Andre Palat right in front of the net by himself that I don't know how it was stopped, but it was, you know, someone got a piece of it, and then you still didn't cover properly and left, you know, only one of the best goal scorers on the planet standing there waiting for a one timer, you know, with 7 seconds left.
7 seconds left in the game. Right. Like that's a heartbreaker.
But I do think that this is, I mean, like I said, I want to take the game length out of this.
The Islanders can absolutely win tonight and turn this into a 2-2 series.
This is a 7. This feels like a 7 in my mind.
That would be awesome.
And now, after game 3, you've got them frustrated too.
Oh, for
Tampa,
sure.
Cirelli really knows how to stir the pot when it comes to that stuff. And Hedman just went in there like, all right, fine, screw it. Let's just do this part of it then. You know, because Kucherov didn't look like he really wanted any part of that stuff. He was just trying to disrupt the goal.
No, and I think that's why
Pageau
Hedman got
turning
in there.
Around.
Yeah.
You know, and not only that, but even Matt Martin with the fight at the end, like there was no real reason to have that fight. But man, does it set a tone for game four. And it's
sure
awesome
does.
That it does. Like finally, that's the – like I even said, it took 3 games – and maybe took 2 rounds of the playoffs to find one like this. But finally, you've got that series that
there's
feels like
heat.
They really – like there's heat. Sergachev came out and said, I can tell you – like I don't know if it's a rivalry, but I can tell you we don't like them. Boom.
Like
there
like
it is. That's what I want to hear, though, in the playoffs. Like,
I don't
this
like
is
any guy on their team. Sorry, I had to make
Sid.
The reference. Whenever
gotta
I
do the Sid reference.
Whenever I hear it, I have to make the reference. But either way, game 4 of that series is tonight. And I think that series looks like a lot of fun as we
here. It's actually this afternoon.
Oh,
it's 3.
Will be this afternoon.
Yeah, so that's why I said when this drops, we're going to already know result.
Yeah. Well, unless it's in triple overtime. But either way.
Brace yourself for triple overtime, everybody.
Either way, maybe you can listen to this show between the intermissions. And get your you would think fill between the intermissions of this overtime tonight. Either way, you can come back next week. And in the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at YWT Podcast. Kevin
like said
next.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kevin is at Kevin_Durso. We're also over on Sports Talk Philly at Sports Talk PHL on Twitter. And we can be found on sportstalkphilly.com. You can also follow their Flyer coverage at Flyerdelphia over there. And we're also every other place you can find podcasts, Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, blah, 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 we're everywhere.
Yes.
You know,
all that stuff. Like you said, next week, by the time we're back, we're going to know the Stanley Cup final.
We will know the Stanley Cup final matchup, and we are running out of season. So as the shift kind of looks forward to beyond the season. We do have a little bit more playoff hockey, and some of that's today, and we'll talk about more of it next week.
Yeah, you know what? The other thing I think I want to throw out really quickly is that the dates for the draft and free agency were finalized.
Yes.
Talk about a quick turnaround whenever the cup final is over, because I think that
– The cup has to be awarded by October 5th. The draft
if I calculated correctly, I think that the final – like the day of game 7, if they do it the right way, is going to be October 4th.
Yeah, I think I heard that.
If I mapped it out properly.
The original date was October 5th. I believe it slid up to October 4th. The draft will be the 6th and 7th.
Yeah.
And free agency is the 9th. You can win the cup and 5 days later sign with a new team.
Well, but can you imagine a team like, you know, like whether it's Vegas, Dallas, Tampa, Dallas. Or the Islanders? But can you imagine if it's one of those teams that you win the cup and wait a minute, you have 5 days to tie up the loose ends of the unrestricted free agents?
You better sober up quick, bud.
Yeah, right. Well,
friendly deals in that window.
The GM better sober up quickly. That's all, you know.
Well, we're gonna.
But you don't think Lou Lamoriello is gonna be going on that hard at that point in time.
That man. Well, we will see if Lou Lamoriello has a chance to pop champagne, and we'll be talking about that next week. See if they're in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, we'll see.
And until then, we'll see you guys later.